Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Steve Burkowski, Brentley Romine with you. Brentley, appreciate you holding down the fort last week. Busy one in Ponte Vedra at the Players for me. So you caught up with the legendary Dan Brooks that shared many pearls of wisdom in his 40-year Hall of Fame coaching career in Durham.
That was a fun one too, Burko. And I'll tell you what, doing a solo podcast, it's pretty nerve-wracking, and I'll have to admit, I did about maybe 12 takes before I finally got it right, but it ended up working out. I think it was okay, and I actually listened to it a little bit ago. What a long day for me. I know you had some travel, but my wife bought a china cabinet and down in Melbourne, Florida, about maybe an hour and a half away, and we were going to pick it up in a few weeks when we got a truck and whatever. Well, they called today and said, hey, we can't hold it that long. So I went to Lowe's. I rented a 8x5 pickup truck, huge thing, Ford F-350, 450. I don't know what the exact number was, but I drove it all the way down to Melbourne and back today. So I'm coming in a little hot, and but it looks great though. That's all that matters.
It seems like I did have an easier day. I went from Florida up to Connecticut, 4 days in the studio coming up tomorrow, beginning tomorrow. Looking forward to that. Now, the question, I'm going to circle back. What do you put in the china cabinet?
Oh, it's already filled. It's amazing. It's a bunch of Mackenzie Child stuff. I don't know if your wife is into the Mackenzie Child prints or whatever it's called.
I've never heard of it. And Kate, my better half, as she always says, because I keep things, she's like, you know, when you go on trips and you come back, things are in the garbage. You just don't know what they are. So she thins out the house accordingly. So I was just curious because we have one as well. And we never got wedding china. I can make the argument very overrated because you use it maybe two times a year. But my mother.
So what goes in it?
My mother was kind enough to give me her wedding china that is now 55 years old, simple Lennox, off-white, gold trim, goes with everything. She's like, well, we don't use it anymore. And she's like, I'm going to give you advice. Don't put it on your wedding registry because 362 days a year, it sits there. Great advice. She shared it. So every time we have Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner and we don't have Thanksgiving at our house, so she is right. We use it 2 days a year. So I was curious. So we do have the china. That means more to me than anything we would have gotten when we got married.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's probably worth a gold mine now.
See? You never know. Maybe Kate's going to sell that. She's like, you notice things are gone. Maybe she'll make a pretty penny.
Are you doing golf today or Golf Central?
Golf Central, pre and post. I don't think we have golf today on Thursday and Fridays. We usually let the pre-game take care of that. Well, I'll find out soon enough. We digress. A lot going on. You caught up with Cam and Clay come between your furniture pickup and me on a plane to get to the Nutmeg State. So stay with us. That's coming your way. But speaking of Dan Brooks, we have to give you and him all the credit because they went to the Florida State matchup, shot the third best score in women's history, 24 under par, 264. They won by 10 over Florida State. Katie Lee, the freshman from the Garden State, New Jersey, wins by 3. You pose some questions. Is there a podcast bump? Absolutely. You realized I'm dead weight. You and Dan can take this as far as you want. Is Duke for real? They're a little bit better than I thought. And I saw glimpses of that at the Darius Rucker. I still have questions. You know, I need to see more from Andy Smith. I look at Phoebe Brinker and I feel like she should be a second team All-American. Don't see the consistency. And I'm not knocking it. I'm putting it in perspective to what Duke has been for 25 years. but it's got to boost the confidence, especially at this time of the year. You know, maybe that jump starts Katie Lee to bigger and better things.
Yeah, and we have to maybe put this tournament into a little bit of perspective. A very top heavy event. And Georgia finishes third. They don't have Savannah DeBach coming off a pretty poor showing in Augusta. So not exactly a quad one win, since it is March and, you know, college basketball quad one, you know, all the quadrants. I don't even know how many there are, but that seems to be the big importance. I would chalk this up to maybe a quad two win for Duke to beat Florida State on their home golf course, a Seminoles team that is slowly nearing full strength. Charlotte Heath, T13, they're getting her back to maybe closer to the player that she once was. But I look at what Duke did and the fact that you mentioned Phoebe Brinker. She was T24 playing out of the fifth spot. If she plays like that second team All-American that you're talking about, and then Katie Lee is a player that can go out and win golf tournaments. I really like Emma McMiler, the transfer from Xavier, another basketball school. I don't know if they're the ninth-ranked team in the country now. It was quite a big jump from 19th to 9 just for one win. But definitely a team I think we'll see get through a regional and not quite top 8 yet. But, I mean, who knows? I could be wrong. But definitely the stock is through the roof now compared to maybe what I thought about Duke going into Darius.
Yeah, they're progressing nicely. We always talk about this time of the year, conference championships. Goodness, we're a month away, you know, less for some others. So kind of winding down there in terms of the regular season. But kudos to Duke. We'll see if the progression goes. We don't need to sidebar to the regionals. That win shouldn't move you 10 spots, but that's sort of par for the course on this season. Some other things you wanted to touch on, and certainly worth it. Western Kentucky for the ladies winning the spring break shootout. Katie Craig, her second win of the year. She's played in 8 events. She's finished in the top 10 every single time. We always love it, whether it's the men, the women, the outlier. Go back to, gosh, was it the COVID year? Natalie Srinivasan from Furman won the Anika Award. You know, you can get that non-Power 5 program that just has a world beater. Or even
Sahith Tagala.
Yeah, it's possible.
Pepperdine's a fake mid-major, though.
Yeah, true. But, you know, not a blue blood, if you will, or, you know, the big-time conferences. So kudos to Katie there. And then how about South Florida? Clean sweep, Melanie Green and the Bulls winning the Mountain View Collegiate, beating Texas A&M by 4. Maria Jose Marin, Arkansas, runner-up finish, as good as any in the country. So we're starting to see these newcomers, and I think we've touched on it, and maybe I did on Golf Central a pod. I really believe we are transitioning. These fifth-year seniors are done in the next 2 months, and the handful of newcomers, Katie Lee, Maria Jose Marin, Paula Martin, San Pedro. I'm excited for what the next couple of years could like in women's college golf. It could be really special.
Yeah, it seems like every year these stud freshmen are coming in. And I was actually kind of surprised to see that Maria dropped in the rankings. Ingrid, one of those fifth-year seniors that you're talking about, COVID year, moves into the number one spot. But yeah, Paula Martin, San Pedro, a stud. Farrah O'Keefe from Texas is maybe a freshman that we don't talk about. Certainly, we mentioned Savannah DeBach earlier from Georgia. That hasn't been playing her best since arriving in the spring, but, you know, a former top 30 world amateur in the world. So, yeah, it's just refreshing. And you add Anna Davis to the mix now, too, who is still trying to get her feet wet just a little bit in college golf. Has been pretty uber consistent, played well at the Darius for most of that tournament. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's the TrackMan era. It's the technology era. Everyone has a mental coach. Everyone has a, you know, instructor that uses the biomechanics and all that. I really think we're, you know, going to get more and more of these young players coming out ready to go as soon as they get to college.
Quick thought, being posted up predominantly on the 17th hole Tuesday and Wednesday for multiple hours at live from practice round, the best players in the world. I think every single one had the TrackMan, the other thing. When did this all happen? And I say it rhetorically. How about looking at the wind? How about getting a number and hitting a golf shot?
Throwing up a blade of grass. You know what? I don't know. I started seeing TrackMans probably about 2015, 2016.
Yeah, in the last 5 to 10 years. And I get it. They're the world's best spin. But everyone just whoop, like a little shopping cart at Publix. Drop it down. Look at the numbers. I don't know. Just a thought once you said that, because I kept looking and looking, and part of me wanted to just pick it up and say, why don't you go hit a golf shot?
Well, it's kind of showing on the greens. I mean, far fewer great putters out there, at least among the elite, than maybe there were 10 or 15 years ago. But maybe that's just because all the great ball strikers have gotten so much better. They kind of elbow the putters, you know, the short hitters, the putting prowess guys, you know, kind of bump them out a little bit.
Yeah. That's a quick recap of the women. Stay with us. Brentley caught up with Ken and Claycomb of Alabama. That interview coming your way in just a matter of moments. About the Florida Gators, third win of the spring at the Schenkel. They beat Notre Dame by 4. They played well in Vegas too. For the pride I have in my alma mater, winning a national championship last year, I quite honestly thought this season was a struggle. I thought the 500 rule could come into play. I think there are a really legitimate chance to not breeze through a regional, but I'm seeing enough from the Gators that they're a legit top 15 team, in my opinion. Second tier, you know, 8 to 15, but they're good.
They could sneak in there. I mean, they could do what Virginia did last year, kind of come out of relative nowhere a little bit to make match play, maybe as a high seed or kind of low odds. But they did that with Ann Gilligan outside the top 20. And I know you'll like this. He played as an indie, but John Dubois, T30. I mean, baby steps there, 2 under 70 with an eagle in the final round. Yeah, maybe they get him figured out at the right time, and they're even better than they're playing right now.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Nathan Frank, South Carolina, wins individually, but hours later, thankfully, and I know you're on top of it, all the specifics, but a van accident on the way home. He's got a broken elbow. He's done for the season. Goodness that everything is okay, considering what could have maybe happened for all those involved.
Yeah, and talking with both of their coaches, Bill McDonald, who was not driving the van, he was about 2 miles ahead in his car. There was not room for him. So Brady Greger, the assistant coach, was actually driving. And you know, they'll both tell you. I mean, and it's funny, Bill was even talking to a coach earlier in that tournament about, you know, the toughest job that these college golf coaches have has nothing to do with the golf. It's transporting these kids around the country, oftentimes on highways and oftentimes late at night after 36 whole days and then 8 early morning, 18 whole final rounds, and get back in the van and try to be home by class the next morning. So it's something that coaches in other sports don't have to worry about. I mean, you think the football coach at South Carolina or the basketball coach is flying the plane or driving the big bus back from a game. I mean, it's not happening. And it's crazy that this happened just days removed from the 2-year anniversary of the University of the Southwest crash, which ended up fatal. Thankfully, you know, this accident was relatively minor, but yeah, I mean, it's scary, and it's a fear that all these coaches have, and they'll tell you that. But I mean, heck of a job by Brady, kind of being aware. And you know, granted, it wasn't late at night; it was still pretty light outside. And it's a path that you and I will be taking here in a couple weeks up to Augusta, right there in Waynesboro. We're coming around the corner right before you get to the big Walmart there, about an hour south of Augusta, and someone just turns out left-hand turn right in front of him, and he makes a quick veer and swerve and ends up avoiding a direct hit, 45-degree angle, keeps it upright. And, you know, at the time it was funny too, Burko, because I don't know if you've been in how many car accidents you've been in, but I've been in at least one, and the adrenaline kind of keeps, you know, you don't feel necessarily any injuries at the time because your adrenaline's going. You're like, oh, I feel fine. And so everyone was, you know, they got back to campus that night and everyone thought they were, all right, I'm good. Next morning, Nathan wakes up and he can't extend his right arm. So hairline fracture, right elbow, he's in a sling, no cast, no surgery. That's good, but going to be, you know, out at least 4 or 5 weeks. And then it's shaking the rust off and trying to get back to the player that he was, which was a two-time winner this season. So South Carolina's, they're in a little bit of a tough spot because they're not very deep. That's their best player. They are right now 58th, or they might be a little bit better now in the rankings, but they're just a few wins over 500. So it's going to be, I mean, it's going to take every bit that they have over these final two regular season events in the SEC championship to make regionals. But yeah, crazy. I mean, can you think of another sport that has that the kind of travel demand as a golf? Maybe tennis.
That was what came to mind. I don't know enough about it.
A small roster where they're not getting the big charter.
Yeah, it's tough. Hey, thankfully, could have been a lot worse. So, you know, count your blessings there, and you know, we'll hope Nathan can maybe get back this year, if at all possible. ECU, East Carolina, they win their home event. Texas Tech wins the All-American. Good one out in California, new event, Palma Valley. Vandy beats a red-hot San Diego by 7. 6 guys that tied for 22nd or better. It was the challenge Scott Limbaugh presented to his team. They responded. Jonas Baumgartner from Oklahoma State wins. Cowboys in third. Still work to do to get above 500. And TCU, it's just taking their lumps this year. You know, make a transition after Bill Monagel retired nearly 40 years there in Fort Worth. It's the Vandy that you want to see at this point, in my opinion.
Those are your guys. That's your pick. You're rolling with them.
I am. And Gordon's still not quite when he was the third best Commodore. You can look at it good or bad. I still say Gordon Sargent needs to get back to where he was as a freshman when he won individually. But maybe it also speaks to the depth that everyone else has raised their game.
I mean, how about the golf Jackson Van Paris has been playing? Cole Sherwood, Matthew Riedel, a guy who no one talks about, probably the most underrated player in college golf. So they don't, you know, they're not just Gordon anymore. Maybe that was the case last year for a little bit of a stretch, especially there in the postseason. But I'm definitely eyeing Vanderbilt with you. I think I'm on board now. National title. Mark Brody's rankings don't seem to like the Commodores very well. They've been stuck on the number 3 team in the country for quite some time. But how about San Diego? Speaking of rankings, you go from 68 to 53rd, jump 15 spots. They've now had two great finishes in a row. They've jumped over the 500 line now, 3 wins over. So transfer you could be, Chris Riley and the guys could be, could be spoiling again. I mean, they've been to NCAAs, 3 of the past 4 years or 2 of the past 3, something like that. So there's some experience getting to the end of the line there. And so watch out for this team. Maybe a team that 3 weeks ago we would have said, no way.
Yeah, bullish on the Toreros with about a month to go in the regular season. Linger Longer tournament wrapped up as well. Bama,
best name, and or one of the best names. I don't know what's exactly lingering, but right. Something.
But they're doing it longer. Alabama, 11 shot win over Virginia. Jonathan Grizz, his first college title. JP Cave, second. Cannon Clay come third. And it's nice to see post Nick Dunlap. Maybe this team's got a little moxie coming down the stretch.
Yeah, two strong finishes in a row. They're runner up at the Hate to North Carolina, which they were in that tournament right until the very end. If Cannon Claycomb goes out and turns that 36 hole lead into a strong day and wins the individual title, they might, you know, be looking at back-to-back wins now. But yeah, good for Jonathan Gris. I think people kind of forgot about him, and you know, maybe it kind of wore on him being the guy who was right there with Nick Dunlap as a junior. I mean, he was ranked maybe a couple spots in that class ranking when they signed with Alabama, and all he's done is, you know, not play very well, and he's watched Nick Dunlap get all the accolades and have all the success. And you know, I think maybe some confidence, and you know, as we'll talk about with Cannon here coming up, just a guy who maybe needed to believe in himself a little bit more, and clearly he's doing that. And to open in 62 and get that first college win, it could be floodgates open for Jonathan Gris, because he does have that type of firepower in his arsenal. I mean, top five recruit. So this could be the beginning. And you know, maybe Alabama isn't, maybe they're not left for dead after all. You know, maybe they still got a little fight. They got a lot of experience, and they've got a coach who's been there before many times. So yeah, I mean, good to see them, you know, lingering longer than everyone else.
Yeah, and a lot of them popped over after the hate and said a quick hello to me at 17, Jay Sewell, Jimmy Green from Duke, and others. So good to see a little crossover in those two tournaments. But you referenced the fact you caught up with Cannon Clacom a little bit earlier in the day. Sit back, relax, and enjoy, and then we'll be back on the backside of things to give you our March Madness selections.
All right, I'm pleased to be joined by Alabama fifth-year senior, super senior, Cannon Clacom. Cannon and the Crimson Tide on a bit of a hot streak, so we figured we need to get them on the pod, or at least a representative from the Alabama men's golf team on the pod while they're still hot. Cannon, have you guys cooled off yet since the big win at the Linger Longer earlier this week?
No, I don't think so. It's been a couple weeks in a row. We played the Hate last week. We played, obviously, this week at Linger Longer, and then we leave Friday for Floridian. So not really any time to chill out or cool off, but I think that's a good thing because we're hot right now.
A great field at the Floridian coming up for the Valspar Collegian. I think it's a who's who in men's college golf. But let's talk about the Linger Longer just for a second. Correct me if I'm wrong, but was this the best performance, all things considered, for this team all season?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably our best performance of the year regardless. I think this was better than we played in the in the fall. You know, in the fall we had Nick, obviously, but I don't think the rest of the lineup was kind of playing as well as we wanted to play. And I was kind of telling people earlier in the week, it's easier to hide behind a 74 when you're counting a 65 in the one spot. And obviously Grizz shot 62 in the first round this week, but we've kind of realized, yeah, that helps a lot, but I think we've kind of realized that the 65 is not a given anymore. Like it felt like it was with Nick, and all of us kind of have to pull our weight a little bit harder and count the shots. Every shot counts. We had some issues, you know, with finishing bad in the fall, maybe not, you know, caring enough about a round at the end, which obviously, like I said, it didn't really matter because we had Nick. But I think we've done a better job of picking that back up, finishing rounds better this year. And in the spring, I think we've just kind of built on confidence that we've acquired over the first, what, three events now? So it's been good.
Yeah, Jonathan Gris, first college victory. You mentioned the 62. Ends up beating a pretty good field. Christo Lamprey, Georgia Tech, also in there. Ben James from the Virginia Cavaliers, Walker Cupper. But you guys didn't just get the individual win. You got second, JP Cave, and third yourself. You mentioned the complete team performance, even throw Austin Coggin as an Indy, as a T22, very respectable finish. Was there sort of some sort of meeting after the meeting? We all know Nick Dunlap met with you guys to kind of talk over his thoughts and break the news to you that he was turning professional. I don't think any of you guys blamed him for that. But was there a meeting after that meeting where Coach Sewell said, all right, Cannon Clacom, all right, Thomas Ponder, my leaders, all right, Jonathan Gris, a blue chip recruit a couple years ago in Nick Dunlap's class, you guys now, the onus is on you guys to step up your game. Otherwise, this could be a long spring.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I kind of fit into that leadership role regardless before Nick turned pro, and Pondy the same and JP the same. But I mean, we all respected Nick because of what he shot and how he played. But a lot of people forget that he's 20 years old and he's a sophomore. So he hadn't seen the things that we had seen over the 4.5, 5 years that some of us have been here. And there were a lot of things that we were able to tell Nick what to expect, what, how to do things, you know, where to show up and when, that he truly still didn't know. So he was a leader on the golf course, but I think we were a little more leaders off the golf course in terms of the whole team thing. And then obviously with Nick, like, we all knew he was turning pro as soon as he won. I told him that, like, the reason you come to Alabama is to play professional golf, and you've just bypassed the extra 2 years that it takes to get to the professional ranks. So you have to go. But I think it was kind of understood in that team meeting after he talked, you know, we kind of talked, and I just tried to instill that we're still a really good golf team, whether people believe we're a good golf team or not. And I think that we can still do really cool things if, you know, the back half kind of picks it up a little in the front, myself and Thomas, lead a little bit better from the front with our golf scores. And I think that's what we've done. Pondy played really good at Watersound. He played good at the Hate. I played really good at the Hate. And then we all kind of played good at Linger Longer. But I mean, as a leader and an older guy, like, you need to play good and you need to lead your team, and there's no excuses for not playing good. And that was kind of the discussions that we had. I thought we were still doing the right things. I thought we were in the right headspace. I just think we had some guys, myself included, that didn't know if we were good enough. And I think we are good enough, and we just had to believe that we were good enough, and just go out there and play golf. And that's kind of what we've been doing lately.
Is there a tournament in the fall, or maybe a practice or some sort of team gathering that kind of sums up maybe you guys not believing in yourselves fully or not caring as much as you need to, not feeling like you're a top 10 team, but that you're kind of just going through the motions? Was there some sort of anecdote from the fall that shows that?
Yeah, I think I mean, like, the whole fall, really, like, Nick wins the SEC match play, which was really three rounds of stroke play before a match play.
Yeah, I call, like, it the fall preview now.
Yeah, like, he wins, shoots like 13 or 14 under. We shoot like 3 under as a team and finish like 8. And we won twice in the fall. One was at Maidstone, which was a team of like 8 Ivy League schools and 3 Division I schools. Well, not that the Ivy Leagues aren't Division I, but
sick, and then course, we,
yeah, it was awesome course. Awesome course. Nick shoots 60, almost shoots 59, whips out for 59 there. And then, like, at Steelwood, Nick was recovering from the Walker Cup, and he was playing the team championship in Dubai like that week before. So he didn't play Steelwood. Again, not a great field. We ended up winning. But it just kind of felt like we were kind of hanging on by a thread. Not that we weren't trying to be our best, or not that we weren't a good team. It was just kind of we didn't have an identity, I felt like. And it felt like that it was kind of like we need Nick Dunlap to play good. And I tried to tell the guys when Nick turned pro, like, it's obviously great to have Nick. Like, we would be a very, very, very good team if Nick Dunlap was still playing for us. But we are still a good enough team to compete and win tournaments and shoot 40 under par. I mean, we shot 40 under par with shooting 3 under the last day, I think. So we had a chance of getting to 50. And I think the lowest team total ever at Alabama is like 54. So I think that's the team we are. I just think it was almost a blessing in disguise that Nick did turn pro, because I think some of us would have hid behind Nick Dunlap's success for a little longer than we probably should have. And I mean, I miss Nick. I talked to him today on the range here at Tuscaloosa, but he's on to bigger and better things. And I think that we're kind of learning how to be a great team post Nick Dunlap. And I think that we're finally starting to do a really good job of that.
How much do you think inspiration, and because you guys have played, you know, you've been teammates with Nick for 1.5 years, Grizz played junior golf with him. How much do you think it's inspiration what you guys are doing now, being able to say, look, this guy won on the PGA Tour and I've gone up with him you know, gone toe-to-toe with him in practice and qualifying and tournaments. I've beaten him on occasion. How much do you think that plays into what you guys are doing?
Yeah, I think it plays a huge part of it. I mean, you know, Nick is someone that we've played against a lot. Not saying he'd never won qualifying. He won qualifying a lot. But, yeah. You know, we beat him in rounds of qualifying, maybe not over 54 or 72 holes. But, you know, you do beat him, and you kind of see that your game can go up against his game. And golf is just a weird game too, where it's, you have one good week and your entire life changes, you know, for the next 10 years. And I'm not saying that's what happened to Nick, but he was in a perfect situation. Amex was kind of a putting contest, and you don't want to get into a putting contest with him. And that was just kind of how it fell. And I think for us, it was good to see that, you know, like, our level of golf is really, really, really high level golf. Because I think sometimes you can play against all these guys and you watch them hit shots. Like, every time I play with Christo, I think about how I can't do what Christo does, right? Like, he has 200 ball speed. He's 6'7". He hits it really far and straight and high. Dunk a basketball. Like, I kind of dink it around and chip it good and putt it decent. But at the end of the day, you know, like, I feel like I can compete with him, you know, every time. That's not to say that he's probably beat me more times than I've beat him, but I feel confident playing against those guys. Like Gordon too. I mean, Gordon's one of the greatest players I've ever seen. He beat me 2-1 at SECs last year, and I was 9-under. So it's a lot of the time, like, I think you get lost in how good other guys are and you forget how good you are. And I think that's kind of where we were in the fall, was like, we put Nick up on this pedestal, like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest player I've ever seen. Which he is, but I think we were discounting how good the rest of us were at times. And I think that's where we kind of fell into a trap of being average and accepting being average. And that wasn't okay. And that's not the Alabama standard that, you know, we've been taught to be. And that's what I've tried to reinstill in the team this year with Coach Sewell's help and Forrest's help, our new assistant. They believe in us, and Sewell might be the most believing person there is in the entire world. We could be horrible and he would think we're great. So I try and feed off of him and try and give all the guys on the team that same understanding that, you know, these guys are really good, but so are you. And that's what I told Grizz all week. Like, he shot 62, he won, and he was like, man, I just played so good this week. And I just kept telling him, like, no, you're just a good player. Like, good players play good. And this week you played great, but it's because you're a good player. You didn't win on accident. You won because you've done the hard work. You've been a great player. And now you're just confident to go out there and win.
Yeah. Seeing Grizz play, I think the first time I saw him play at the U.S. Amateur at Oakmont, I believe it was, and he was really impressive then, and you know, was just kind of waiting for him to break out. Why do you think, you know, just looking at his game, why do you think this could be a guy who could be a number one player on this team, maybe even as soon as later this spring or even once you guys depart?
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's a great player, like I said, and he, I think he just lacked a little confidence. And I think you see it a lot in college golf where guys are the best and then they come onto a team where they're no longer the best and they might be the third or fourth best. And that can break a player down. I mean, it happened to me my freshman and sophomore year. I came in with Wilson Furr and Davis Shore, and they beat me every time. And I thought I wasn't as good as I was. And I think that happened a little with Grizz. And, you know, him and Nick are the same age. So for him, seeing Nick having all this success so quickly, he's probably sitting there thinking, like, why isn't this happening to me? And I just had to remind him that, like, Nick could very well be a generational talent. Like, we might never see another player have an amateur career like that. Like, it's been, what, 38 years since an amateur won on the PGA Tour, something like that?
33?
Yeah, 33.
Trying to erase history here.
Yeah, so it's Phil, and, like, now you have Nick. So, like, that's a pretty good conversation. And then I just told him, like, golf is a hard game, and it's hard to win. And, like, he kept saying he hasn't won in 4 years. And it's like, yeah, but so have a lot of people. Like, a lot of great players, they don't win for a couple of years. And it's just, it's not because you're doing things wrong or you're playing bad. It's just sometimes it's really hard to win. And I think he finally is understanding that a little bit more. And to his credit, he's worked really, really, really hard on his game. And I've seen it. And he's drove, you know, hundreds of miles to go see teachers and get instruction and get other eyes on his golf swing. And he asked us and he asked coach, and he really wants to be great at the game. And I think everything is just finally clicking for him. And I'm going to try and not let him play one, because I want to play better than him and keep the one spot for the rest of the year. But if he takes it, then I'm going to let him have it and let him run with it. And after I leave and all the other guys leave, I think he'd be, you know, front and center to be a leader for the next group of guys that come through.
So you mentioned that your assistant coach is named Forrest, second famous Forrest to don the crimson for Alabama behind kick returner Forrest Gump. But
yes,
Jay Sewell's the guy who makes this program go. I mean, he's poured his heart and soul into Alabama men's golf, couple national titles, runner-up in 2018. What's one thing about Coach Sewell that would surprise a lot of us? Because we see this guy, high energy, fist pumping into the air after Dunlap's winning, you know, on the side of the 18th green there. I think he almost threw his arm out on that. But what's one thing that would surprise us about Jay Sewell?
I think it's probably – I mean, for me, like, he has so much love and so much care and support. And I think people probably think he's high energy and high anxiety and, you know, he's probably hard on his guys. And I actually don't think that's the truth. I thought it was for a while, and I thought he, you know, picked on me for no reason. But as I've gotten older, I realized that, you know, he was picking on me for a reason. I gave him a reason to pick on me. And the reason that he was picking on me was because he loved me and he cared about my future and my well-being. And I think a lot of the people that get recruited here, you know, the pitch is you come to Alabama, you win national championships, you win SEC championships. But I mean, Sewell will be a person that I talk to for the rest of my life. Like, I would call him midday at 1 o'clock and he'd pick up and talk to me for an hour and a half if he could. And I think that gets lost a lot of the time, I think, in college golf, because it's, you know, golf is a score-based game where you're not defined by your golf, but in a way you are. Like, at the end of the day, what you shoot is kind of who you are, and that's just the brutal part of the game. But Sewell makes it known that golf is hard, and he's never once gotten mad at me for, you know, hitting a bad shot or having a bad round. The only time he's ever gotten upset is if I have a bad attitude and I kind of give up on a round, where I don't try my hardest. And that's where I had to grow a little bit and be like, all right, you know, I don't need to act this way on a golf course, or I don't need to say these things during a round. But he did it out of love and he did it out of respect. So I think that would be the biggest thing. I mean, me and him butt heads like this. We're too out, like,
yeah,
we want to be in charge all the time, and we're loud. But he's walked with me all spring, and I actually think we've had a really good relationship for a couple of years now. And I think, you know, these last 4 months have been really cool for me getting to know him, like, on the golf course a little bit better. And he's full of love and compassion, and he's just a big old teddy bear.
Does he have a nickname for you? You said he picks on you a little bit. Does he?
No, not really. He just calls me Cannon. He has nicknames for the other guys. If I didn't like my nickname, I'd probably give him hell for it a little bit. And so I think he kind of ignored the nickname for a while. Some other guys, you know, have nicknames for me, but we don't really call people by their names on this team. So nicknames are a huge thing, but we kind of try and keep Sewell out of it a little bit.
Fair enough. This is kind of a broad question. It's kind of the landscape of college athletics. And as a college athlete yourself, I'm sure you have some thoughts. But what are your thoughts on kind of transfer portal and NIL, maybe not just in golf, but other sports as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know much about the transfer portal. I think it's good. I think you should be able to transfer from a school if you don't like it. I think that would be really tough to be trapped into a situation where you have to be somewhere that you don't want to be. With that being said, like, I mean, I don't know, like, we've brought guys in the transfer portal. We've had guys get into the transfer portal. I think there should probably be a rule where you can only transfer a certain amount of times. And, you know, at some point during the season with golf, it's probably harder because it's a fall and spring sport. But with other sports, you know, they're designated championship seasons. I think you should have a window where you can and cannot transfer. And then NIL, I think golf is kind of weird because it's, you know, not a revenue sport and it's not huge at some schools and it's really big at other schools. I think we, you know, should be able to make money as student athletes. And I know the whole argument is that they pay for school and they pay for housing, and that doesn't get lost on me. I appreciate, you know, graduating without having student debt and never having to deal with those issues that a lot of people have to deal with. But I do think there's also something, you know, that we do as student athletes that are a little different than normal students and probably should be compensated for a little bit. I don't know exactly what that looks like. I haven't given it a ton of thought. But I do think at some point there should probably be a universal rule about NIL where, you know, certain states don't have an upper hand on other states. Certain schools don't have upper hands on other certain schools. But that's not up to me. And I think that will probably get passed pretty soon, because the biggest thing I worry about with NIL is giving all these college kids a ton of money and then them not realizing that they have to pay taxes on it, and it gets them in a sticky situation in 2 or 3 years when they leave school. So I think there should be – sorry, go ahead.
What's the percentage of college athletes you think that don't know anything about taxes? I think it's over 50?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a lot. Like, not that they don't know about taxes. It's just like they don't know how to get in touch with a CPA or someone that knows how to file taxes or – the correct way to file taxes and what should be written off, what can't be written off, stuff like that. And like the school here, we do have people that are in touch with, you know, athletes that are getting money to help them through that filing of taxes and, you know, what you have to present to the IRS at the end of the day and what you don't. But I think that could be a serious situation that, you know, a lot of people haven't thought through enough probably yet.
Yeah.
But I think there will be like blanket, you know, representation for all these student athletes at some point.
I just go to Burko for all my tax questions and
yeah, it's probably needs, a good call. But,
well, let's dive in real quickly to your background. You know, for those who don't know, kind of Bowling Green, Kentucky native / Orlando, Florida, kind of in your formative years.
Yep.
Younger brother Cooper, now a freshman at Louisville. You guys kind of contended a little bit against each other at the Hate until that final day. But just quickly sum up your background, how you got started in golf, and what it was like playing with your brother, and you know, maybe some PGA Tour pros and stuff down at Lake Nona.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, I'm from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Lived there until I was about a freshman in high school. I really claim Bowling Green, Kentucky. When people ask me where I'm from, that's where I tell them I'm from. Moved down to Orlando my freshman year, like I said, played a lot of golf down there. Went to a place called Circle Christian High School. Cooper joined me. Three-sport athlete, actually.
What was your third sport?
Cooper and I played doubles together in tennis.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought you were going to tell me football.
I don't even think we had a football team. But, yeah, moved down there to Lake Nona. Got to play with guys like, you know, Ian Poulter, Henrik Stenson, Graham McDowell, Will Bateman, who's on the Korn Ferry Tour now. Yeah. I used to play a lot with him. Keith Green, qualified for the U.S. Open last year. Yeah. So just like a lot of mini tour guys and, you know, big level tour guys. I was really more in with the mini tour guys at that point, which was great for me seeing like, hey, like the Canadian tour and the Latin tour is a really hard place to be at when I was 15, 16 years old. And I think that kind of motivated me to be a little better junior golfer, trying to get a little more experience before then. But like you said, played golf at Circle Christian, won a state championship there. Lost individually to John Dubois 1 year, who plays at Florida. And then Cooper got to play with me on the golf team, played 4 years of high school basketball. Cooper was the shooting guard. I was the point guard, ironically enough. And we were horrible, but we got the ball all the time and we got to play all the minutes. So that was fun. And then, like I said, played doubles with Cooper as well, which was really cool. And played a lot of junior golf stuff, played two junior President's Cups, a junior Ryder Cup, was like a 4 or 5 time Rolex All-American. So yeah, it was a fun junior career. And then Alabama's been fantastic, and hopefully a great pro career to follow.
So when you say you guys got the ball a lot, was that because you deserved the ball or because you just didn't want to give it up?
Yeah, I mean, we deserved the ball. Like, I was definitely the second best player. Cooper was the best player. That pains me to admit, but he was. Yeah, I mean, our school, I think my graduating class was like 36 people. So we were really
small school.
You guys
made the playoffs though, right? Didn't you make the playoffs?
Yeah, we made the playoffs 2 years in a row. My junior and senior year, won three. We lost in the district championship my senior year. We played the team in Orlando. They have a black court, all black court. I forget. It's like Masters Academy, maybe. It was really cool. I just remember playing.
It would
that.
Be blue. Oh yeah, probably Masters over.
Yeah, it was Vita. Black. It was a black floor and it had blue lettering on it. I just remember that floor.
Yeah, probably
really
Masters
cool.
then.
Yeah, they beat us by like 50 in the district championship, but it was fun. Oh,
gosh. Hopefully you didn't foul out.
I did not foul out. That's I played good. All whatever 32 minutes, I guess. But yeah, it was fun. Basketball was, you know, my first true love. I was just never as good at basketball as I was golf. So that's how it crumbled.
Do you have a legacy story like Sam Horsfield does, where you beat Ann Poulter over 9 holes as a kid, or no?
No, nothing like that. I mean, Sam is a good friend of mine. We've played a lot. I think there's been, you know, a lot of good matches between him and I. I think the coolest part, honestly, for me was growing up playing the junior players, like in junior Ryder Cup and junior President's Cup. Like, I played a singles match in my first junior President's Cup when I was 15. I played Christo, and I think I beat him like 5-4. And then last
How tall
week,
was he then?
Was he, still he was about feet? The same height. Yeah, he was okay. Just as tall. But I mean, that was what, six or seven years ago now. And I played with him last week at Linger Longer, and we were kind of talking about that week. And I think that's been the coolest part for me is, you know, I got to play really good guys in junior golf, and I'm still playing against them now in college golf. And it's been cool watching all these people grow and, you know, do their own thing. And I'm kind of over here doing my thing and trying to grow as well. And I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. So it's been fun.
He's going to be a guy you probably see down the road this spring at a regional or NCAA championship. Speaking of which, it's easy to say, you know, main goal to win an NCAA team title, but what do you have to do to accomplish that? You know, we've seen a preview of it kind of at the Linger Longer, but what do you guys have to do? Maybe, you know, maybe one, a couple little things that you guys got to make sure you take care of in order to get where you want to be.
Yeah, we're doing – so Seawall has came up with a stat right now, and I hope I'm not giving away his secrets, but it's drives out of play, three putts, scrambling, total putts, and doubles, double bogeys. So we text in, you know, our stats at the end of every round. I think last week we had 3 three-putts as a team, 4 drives out of play. We were scrambling at like over 60% and everyone averaged under 30 putts and we had 2 doubles, I believe, as a team. So when those stats are really low, we play really good golf. And Seawall kind of told us that in the fall, and I finally believed him at the start of the spring and kind of bought into that whole thing. But he's right. I mean, when you have those 5 statistics better than average, you play really good golf. And that's kind of the little things I think you're talking about is if you can limit 3 putts, limit doubles, limit drives out of play, and you can learn how to chip and putt, I think you are going to beat a lot of people, regardless of how good they are or how good you are. It's just how it works. It's how the game of golf works. So I think if we can, you know, keep doing those Seawall stats really well, I think we have a good chance of being a really good team come postseason.
Now, the postseason in golf still a couple months away, but postseason in college basketball right around the corner starts tomorrow. We're recording this on a Wednesday evening. First balls are tipped noon and shortly thereafter. You're a big, well, obviously you're a big Alabama hoops fan, big yep. Kentucky hoops fan as well.
Yes.
Very difficult, I know, for you these last 5 years on who to root for there. But I know you filled out a bracket. So let's kind of go through your Elite Eight, and then we'll do a little bit of a sleeper. And then on the back end of this, when I get Burko on here later tonight, we'll add his picks as well. But give us your Elite Eight.
Yeah. So let me pull my bracket up real fast. Let me find my Elite Eight. All right. So I have UConn playing Iowa State. I have North Carolina playing Arizona. I have Houston playing Kentucky. And I have Samford playing Tennessee.
Okay. So going all on Samford.
All in Alabama. On Samford. Sleeper, I think Samford's a really good team.
Kansas, I mean, that's got to be your sleeper. You got them in the Elite Eight.
Yes, but I also have McNeese State. I believe they beat Kansas in the first round, I think is their matchup. Gonzaga. Okay, so I have McNeese State beating
Kansas.
Yeah. All right. So I have McNeese State beating Gonzaga. I think McNeese State is a really good team. Will Wade is a really good coach. I really disliked him when he was at LSU, but I do have to admit he's a really good basketball coach. Samford, I think, is a good basketball team. I think they have a real shot of making the Elite Eight. And then big time sleeper pick, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Western Kentucky University beats Marquette in the first round.
Kind of like that.
Round 32.
Colex banged up. Kind of like that. I actually have Marquette going to the Final Four in one bracket. So I hope you're wrong on that. I was very shocked you didn't pick Auburn to beat UConn. I figured that would be upset you would target.
I don't know. Auburn, I think, only has one quad one win, hasn't been tested on the road, or they just haven't. They are. I'm not saying Auburn's a bad team. I think they're a good basketball team. I think they look for calls that aren't there sometimes. And in March, I think the officials get a little harder. And I think that's why Purdue has lost early the last couple of years too, is Edie gets called for fouls that he usually doesn't get called for, gets in early foul trouble, and then they don't really have another option to go to. So.
He's also just not very what's the word? He's not very nimble. I'm not on the ED train. One last thing. Shocked you didn't pick Alabama in the Elite Eight. Are you a kind of guy? I mean, you had Kentucky. So
I did have Kentucky.
Clearly not shying away, but why do you think Alabama doesn't make it? And if they do make a run, what do you attribute that to?
I just think that they don't have the talent they had last year. I think Sears is really good. We really needed Bediako to come back. He went to the draft last year. I think a lot of people thought he was going to come back. The only reason I didn't pick him was I just thought my bracket would be better in the points without Alabama in the Elite Eight. I do think they're capable of making a deep run. I think they're fast, they're quick, they shoot it well. The only thing that worries me is their defense hasn't been great this year, which could be the argument against Kentucky as well. You saw the Kentucky-Alabama game.
Defense is even worse.
Yeah, and I think, you know, both teams have to shoot it really well for six or seven games in a row, and I think that's just a tall ask come the middle of March. So I hope Alabama makes a deep run. We just signed Oates to an extension. I think that was a great call by the Board of Trustees. I think they should keep him around for as long as he wants to stay around. And I think there's actually a big-time basketball buzz in the city of Tuscaloosa right now, which – Kentucky native in me has really relished the last couple of years, you know, winning SEC championships, winning over 20 games in the regular season. It's been a fun time to be a basketball fan in Alabama.
Hopefully there's some golf buzz to go along with it here in a few weeks. Cannon, thanks for the hoops insight, the golf insight, the insight into your game, Alabama program, a little bit Nick Dunlap. Definitely thank you for some of the Jay Sewell insight. We always appreciate that. So good luck next week at the Valspar, and thanks for coming on College Golf Talk.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Roll Tide.
Okay, Burko, I just had to give my guy Cannon a little bit of crap, being both an Alabama and a Kentucky fan. Competing interests there, although you're used to it. Michigan, Florida, not same conference, but two blue bloods and, you know, two of the best teams in the country year in and year out. So I guess you can relate a little bit to them.
I can, and then throw in Rutgers. I'm never going to sell my dad's alma mater short. And keep in mind, a year from now, watch what they do. They've got the number 2 and 3 high school basketball recruit going to Jersey. Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey.
There we go.
They're going to be one and done, so I hope Steve Peichel figures it out. But for one of the worst offensive teams in college hoops this season, will be fun. See what they do next year. I can never pull the trigger when I fill out brackets of who actually is going to do something. What 7 seed? What 10 seed? We know.
You're a college basketball analyst now, though.
I am. No. I know it. I just can't hit the button and say, this is the team. Now, I'm looking at my bracket because my boys did one as well. But I'm going to give you one. I'm trying to scroll through it. Yes, I did have the guts to. 12-seeded Grand Canyon will beat St. Mary's, and they will beat Alabama. They will go to the Sweet 16 before bowing out against North Carolina. So the former Fighting Dan Marleys, who's no longer the coach there, couldn't tell you who the coach is. Grand Canyon's my little sleeper to make it to the second weekend as a 12 seed.
Cannon is not going to like that when he listens to this back. Yeah. Did you cover, did you do a Grand Canyon game this year? Or?
I didn't. I did in Iowa. I did in Nebraska. I also have the Huskers making it to the second weekend as well. Love Fred Hoiberg's team.
Haven't beaten Houston.
I do. Keisei Tominaga. I hope they make it. Watch him. An absolute joy from 30 feet, and he'll let you know it. Fred Hoiberg, I think, vastly underrated. We always forget what he did at Iowa State. Went to the Bulls, didn't work out. He's kind of duplicating this early stages, at least in Lincoln. And then I did a couple of A-10 games. Dayton is in. I have Duquesne beating BYU, an 11 seed, a little A-10 allegiance. But it comes back. I can never pull the trigger. I got UConn beating Purdue. We know that's not going to happen. A lot of people don't like Danny Hurley. He is his father's son. Growing up in Jersey, seeing what Bob Sr. did with arguably the greatest high school program ever. Maybe them and DeMatha out of D.C. with Morgan Wooten. The guy can coach. Danny Hurley is – you don't have to like him. They're going to be right there. In 2 years, what he's turned around, didn't they win all their tournament games last year by like double digits? It was insanity. Yeah. And they seemingly haven't missed a beat. I think the best team in the league. And Purdue will find a way, even though I have them, they'll find a way to slip up because that's what Purdue does.
They always do. Purdue don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. UConn, I like that. Who's your other two Final Four teams? So you got UConn, Purdue. Who do you got them beating?
Arizona, which I'm not sure why. That's another program that finds a way out in the second round. And I've got Marquette. Not sure why, although I do like Shaka Smart, what he's done there. I just couldn't. I'm looking for Nebraska is an 8 seed. I get an 8 seed and a 12 seed making it to the Sweet 16. That's about as aggressive as I got. And you know, like a New Mexico is going to knock off a Baylor. I got Duquesne beating BYU. I want to think Florida could do something.
After Han Logden.
So what about you? What stands out from your brackets?
You know, I don't pick a ton of – I don't really pick any big upsets in the first round. What I do is my strategy is if I think that a Samford is going to beat Kansas, I won't have Kansas winning more than one game. So smart. I kind of hedge myself there. I have Arizona winning it all. I think adding Caleb Love, he's got some experience of playing in that big game. I have Marquette. I'm a little bit worried about Kolek. It looks a little banged up. Tennessee, I know it's going to burn me because they looked so good early on in the tournament last year, and then hit a wall. And then I have UConn just because, I mean, they're great. And I hate to pick against Auburn. I think Auburn's probably, if they're not in that side of the bracket, they probably make the championship. I think they're very deep. They're too deep. They play defense. They can score. Guard play can be maybe a little bit shaky. Katie Johnson's kind of a bat out of hell sometimes. It's out of control at times. But so I have them unfortunately losing to UConn. I have our Gators losing to Colorado win that game last night.
Yeah, I
think so.
I don't know. That's a great question.
You know what?
Or is actually, it tonight? It's tonight.
No,
it's tonight.
Colorado State won last night because Virginia looked like
Virginia's
they belonged in the CB&I.
How about that? They've been in the NCAA tournament the last five times. They've won one national championship, and the other four, they never got past the first round.
UMBC, the Retrievers. There's not going to be – I will say this. There will not be a 16 or a 15 seed winning this year. I think Colgate at 14 is one maybe to watch against Baylor. But other than that, I don't think we're going to get as with as crazy of a year we had last year. It might be really close to chalk this year.
I'm going to actually go back to the first game you mentioned. Samford's going to beat Kansas.
Yeah,
their point guard's out. One of the best players in the country. Dickinson's still iffy. Kansas lost 10 games this year.
Cannon had them going to the second weekend.
Who, Samford?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's far off. It will be fun to see how many wrong we have, because that's exactly what will happen. But we appreciate Cannon Claycomb for joining us this week on the pod. You as well for tuning in. We'll do it again next week. I think we'll both be back at home base next week leading up to the Augusta National Women's Amateur. So,
yeah, and then we got a special pod the week of the ANWA with Anna Davis, already recorded in the can.
That's what the good ones
do that week. We're
gonna have 78 other things to do that week, so we will have you covered as always. But we appreciate you joining us on College Golf Talk. For Brentley, I'm Burko. We'll do it again next week.